Welcome to the Snowfighters Institute podcast, coming from some of the most interesting people in the professional snow and ice management industry. To learn about their successes, to hear about the challenges they've faced along the way, and to have their perspective on critical issues facing our industry today. Before we get started, I'd like to invite you to follow our social media feeds and to check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com. Please welcome your host, Phil Harwood.
All right. I am so excited to introduce to you David Lammers from Garden Grove out of Canada. And this is really an interesting time for us to be having this conversation because just recently they received a massive snow event. Yeah. And so I'd love to just kind of get caught up on that, hear what's happening. Your brother Paul's probably working every night, probably around the clock. Yeah. He's been going strong for several days now, or a week or more. So love to hear about that as well. But David, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Phil. It's a real joy, real pleasure and honor. Thank you.
Yeah. We want to hear about your business and get to know you a little bit as well. But tell us about this monster storm. And you know, one of my questions for you is, you know, in Canada, is it, do you measure by inches or by centimeters?
Yeah, right. Isn't that funny? We're definitely by centimeters, but we like talking inches.
Okay. All right.
So, you know,
when I was a kid, they tried to put this on us, all the metric, but it didn't work.
That's right.
It didn't work. Didn't adapt.
You guys knew something happened. You knew something we didn't know, but you know, it's amazing. We measure in centimeters, and this snow event was one of those events that it was supposed to stay south of us, and the forecasters kept watching it, and they saw, well, this thing is actually trending north. And as the days got closer, they said, actually, it's trending more west. And so it just continued to, we saw the centimeters going up and up and up to the point where the night before, I sent out a message on my LinkedIn platform and I declared a snow bomb that was going to hit Southern Ontario.
Is that like an official Canadian term? Don't leave your house because the snow bomb's coming.
The snow bomb is coming. And, you know, it's funny. I was watching a lot of different meteorologists and I follow a lot of them on Twitter. And I just felt compelled that this was a declaration I wanted to make. And man, I was right. And it was just an incredible, the way the snow came up and just rested over the GTA and really the Western GTA, Toronto, Greater Toronto area. Mm-hmm. Just got pummeled with almost, well over 18 inches in some of our areas, plus drifting.
Yeah.
Toronto has not seen a snow event like this in 10 years. And
you
so there's
no
still
plans for those.
That's right.
You kind of need in the back of your mind, you're like, you know, just in case we get the big one, I want to make sure I have enough iron. But
that's right.
Know, seriously, when people are doing their estimating and planning and capacity, it's pretty tough to justify. We're always going to have enough, you know, manpower to handle the 18 incher. Because at the end of the day, you're probably not getting paid for that at that level. Be on guard for that. But it is nice to get the incremental revenue. So are you guys doing a lot of hauling and moving snow?
Yeah, good question. So for us, this snow event hit all within 12 hours as well. So it really mostly hit within 6 to 7. And then there was some follow through for the other 5. And so it was one of those very intense, immediate, heavy snowfalls that you just had to do the best you could under the circumstances to get everything open and circled back on within a very quick period of time.
Yeah. And what about the type of snow? What was the temperature? And you're going to have to convert that for us. Was it cold? Was it blowing? What was the deal?
Yeah, we definitely had good sub-zero temperatures. We were looking at minus 10, minus 12 temperatures. So it was good and cold. It was still a heavy snow. Thankfully, it wasn't a wet, heavy snow like a Colorado low. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't those, you know, deep, but it was a very moisture heavy laden system. And it was a very dense snow. So not light and fluffy. It was a pure 18 inches of snow.
Wow. Wow. Well, that, maybe that's a good segue into, you know, just us getting to know your business a little bit. Where are you located? You mentioned the GTA, so you're in Ontario, but where specifically?
That's right. We're in what's called the Midwestern market, the Midwestern region, and that's the GTA West. So really we're looking at, you know, areas that are west of, you know, the main highway corridors of like the 410. So we're looking at Oakville, Milton, Mississauga, and Southern Brampton, and everything west from there into Hamilton, Guelph, Cambridge, and Brantford. So we're in the western, really around the western shores of Lake Ontario, all the region that's around the western shores of Lake Ontario.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. But not as far as, you know, Niagara Falls or Buffalo, not that far.
No, just a few outlier clients in Niagara that, that have asked us to service them
Got it. Yeah, there's definitely a snow belt that rips through there, isn't there?
Yes.
From London all the way over to the GTA.
And we had the lake effect enhancement from the system as well on Monday. So that certainly amplified the totals in the western end. You know, they forecast, of course, we're always watching the way the winds will come off the lake, much like you would, of course, in western Michigan as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So in a snow event, tell us about the coverage area, you know, in terms of size. You know, I don't know if you want to talk about, you know, location on the map, maybe not, because not everyone knows what that means, but just like how many pieces of equipment are out running, how big's the operation, do you have a dispatch team, do you have subcontractors, talk to us about your, what does that operation look like during a snow event?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the exact number of pieces per se at the moment, but we outfit a lot of our sites with dedicated equipment. So all of our loaders and skid steer tractors, walkway equipment is outfitted to a specific property or to a route. And so we're looking at, you know, Caterpillar equipment that's outfitted with metal plus pushers and other various different, if it's not Caterpillar, we've got some New Holland pieces, a few John Deere pieces, you know, and the snow raiders on the walkways and different tractors on the walkways. We're looking in the hundreds of pieces of equipment. On top of that, of course, is all of our plow trucks for our supervisors and any other routes that need to be followed up on, our walkway crews. We're a full self-performing company. So everything that we do is in-house with our equipment and our people.
Nice.
And so we're talking, you know, mid hundreds of staff and hundreds of pieces of equipment.
Big operation.
You know, we've really grown the last couple of years. Our focus has been to grow the snow business. And of course, every property owner has that need. And so as we look to our growth, we're really geared to the snow and landscape management side of things. And so we set up about five hubs now for our service regions. We have our main headquarters and then five service centers so that we can optimize the service response to our clients where they are as well. So we've got our main location and then five service hubs.
That's smart.
Yeah.
So what would exist at a service hub?
So good question. A service hub exists of all of the de-icing. So like a salt dome, a sea container that's outfitted with all the de-icer and shovels and equipment for the walkway teams and any of the safety gear, DEF fluid, and whatnot. So everything that's needed for that region. And then the hub is also outfitted with the salt trucks that it needs, all of the equipment. And the equipment gets staged at various sites around that hub. It's not all right at one spot, but we utilize one of our client properties actually for the hub. So we get permission to use that client location as the hub. Mm-hmm. So we're not renting out, you know, and that way they're getting priority service out of that. And then we optimize our ability from there.
Now, do your employees during an event, are they reporting to the hub and then moving from there? Is that kind of how it works? Okay.
That's correct.
And that's a good
model. Then we recruit. That's right. And they go right to the hub or right to the location.
Sure.
Where they'll be working.
Great.
That's right.
That's fantastic.
It's helped our recruiting. It's helped, you know, we could then recruit from, we're not just trying to recruit from one location. We're recruiting for six locations and we're able to draw on the audience from a bigger area.
Yeah, so I want to stay focused on snow, but I do want to just ask the question, what does your business look like in the summertime?
Right. Our business, size-wise?
Size or even service, like what are you doing in the summertime?
Yeah, so in the summertime, then we get back to running from one location. So then everything is dispatched from head office, and it's full-on grounds management, enhancements, irrigation, turf, again, all of our green season teams all launched from here. And it's a completely different thing. We flip the switch. It's a wild thing, flipping the switch from white to green. And then of course, green to white, you know? But that's what we're doing for the April 1st hard start. And we do a spring launch in the spring, and we do a winter launch for the winter.
Yeah.
And that comes with training. That comes with all the site orientation. It comes with, you know, all the specific crew training that's required. Right. And just understanding the business too, and where we're going. Our green season staff are part of the winter teams, you know, but we're much larger in the winter. Our green season team has a lot of opportunity in the winter.
Yeah. So we're going to come back to that business model scenario that you just described there, because there's a transition that you guys made that you told me about previously, and I want to explore that a little bit. But just I want to just stay on the snow biz a little bit. That's what everyone wants to hear about. all commercial?
Customer all commercial.
So when you say commercial, is it retail? Is it industrial?
Good question.
Is it HOA commercial or no?
Very good question. So if we were to look at 100% of our portfolio, 5% is retail. We want to mitigate our exposure in retail. So we're looking at 5% retail. We've got about 20% HOA condos, but they're very selective. We've been very careful about the kind of properties that we service and who we're providing our dedicated next level services to. The condos are more hand-holding, right? More care needed there, so that we've been more selective. And then, yeah, 75% of the rest of our portfolio is corporate offices, business parks, and small, medium, and large industrial.
Nice. Yeah. And that really ties in well with your summer business as well.
It does. Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. What about the contract mix? Do you have a mix of seasonal and per occurrence, and do you have hybrid models, and how different is how you're set up with the rest of what's going on up in Canada?
Yeah.
If you know.
It's amazing. You know, the industry has changed so much over the last 10 years. You know, when we got started in this in 1999, it was 2000. So we've been going for about 20 years in snow now. We were a lot more per push, you know, 20 years ago. But about 10 years ago, a shift occurred where property owners, property managers, you know, they saw the roller coaster that winter presented in snow totals and accumulation. And we had some low snow winters. And, you know, they just got very accustomed here to seasonal contracts. So over the last 10 years, everything has migrated to seasonal contracts. There are still ancillary services. We do cap things out. On snow totals, it's in our contracts. You know, we won't go beyond 85 inches. And we again measure that based on our markets. Some of it, you know, might be 60 inches. The higher markets we're pricing higher to. We know, right? We look to what the markets are delivering for the snow totals. And we'll quote accordingly, but we'll cap it still.
Nice.
But it is a seasonal all-in agreement that they're looking for.
Yeah, that's good to hear. You know, I just so frustrated by all these unlimited, no cap, take it or leave it. We'll find someone else. And that's, right. There's so much of that going on. It just makes no sense. It's a lose-lose scenario.
And, right.
And it's really bad. So I'm really glad to hear that. Go ahead.
Well, and there's so much to say on that too, about how we run our businesses as owners, right? It's we're in charge.
You have a choice.
That's right. We have a choice, not the customer.
And you have to educate.
That's right.
Where a customer will allow themselves to be educated.
Listen, I want to say this with all due respect to our profession, but my dad said to me, a sucker's born every day. You know, we grew up, dad taught us, you know, he was a business owner as well in a different industry. And he said, a sucker's born every day. Make sure you're not one of them, you know?
And that's great advice.
right? Yeah. And he said, there's someone else who's willing to do what a customer is asking for. It's not you, right? Move on. Mm-hmm. And I think it's real important, right? That we don't do just what, you know, we think the customer wants.
Absolutely. Certainly.
Yeah. I'm not saying don't service them.
Customer, all that stuff.
That's right.
No, but you're right. The business owner has a responsibility to understand correct. Where their thresholds are.
Correct. And liability.
You know, I always threshold. Say, look, if you can swallow an unlimited no cap contract in your portfolio, go for it. Yeah. Understand the risk. Understand why you're doing it.
That's right.
But to be yanked around by a customer, you know, or to put yourself at extreme risk, that doesn't make sense.
No.
You find something else to do. If that's all, if there's no other way out, you're in the wrong industry.
That's right.
You're approaching it the wrong way. Make a change.
And I'll admit, my background is, you know, we've been in business over 30 years, and there was a time where we thought we needed to do everything the customer wanted. And we learned by mistake, you know, that we need to put our foot down and we need to be clear about who we are and what we're doing and not just keep catering, to that ongoing request for more and more and more.
So I'm just curious, you're over 30 years now in the business that you and your brother started. At what point did you have that realization? Halfway through, like, did you have 15 years where it was like, we're just getting yanked around every which way by customers? Was it 10 years in? Was it year two?
Yeah, I would say it was definitely a good 10 years in. Paul and I ran the business by ourselves at the beginning. We would have friends helping us. So the first 15 years of what we were doing was largely just us doing the work and having a, you know, real just good friends and good teams around us helping us doing the work. But once we shifted to building the organization and hiring and developing teams and, you know, signing different contracts with our clients, and okay, now it was like very enlightening, and, you know, it was a whole new experience. We were challenged a lot more as well, right? With having to deal with the ongoing needs of the business development, sales, people, the contracts, the liability, especially when snow kicked in. But yeah, even then when we started doing snow, we weren't ready for all of what we were getting into. We really weren't. It was an area of the business that we hadn't prepared for that before we started. And so we learned a lot by trial and error.
Yeah, I think as soon as you start thinking in terms of, you know, what does this thing look like long-term?
Yeah.
Strategically, where do we want to take this business? And you start looking at it with fresh eyes at a different level. You make different decisions. You start saying, I need to be in control here.
That's right.
We can't be everything to everyone. So again, we're going to talk more deeply about this. I have a few more snow related things I'm just going to throw at you here. The rapid fire. Let's go. Liquids.
Not yet.
Melters.
Melters, not yet.
Does anybody use melters in Canada?
Are they? Yeah, in Montreal they do. And there are a few in Ontario. Sense.
Yeah,
some big sites in Ontario. They are
where it's tight and
absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
you already told me about your hauling operation, so that's cool.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of hauling. Yeah,
and you talked to me about some iron. What about the difference between the trade off between ag tractors versus like loaders and, you know,
right.
other pieces of iron? How do you analyze that?
On the iron, we by experience, we started with tractors, but we found that the tractors couldn't stack the snow. They have good pushing ability, right? They're very strong. They can do a lot of pushing, but they can't do stacking. So tractors are great for speed. They do have some good speed as well and great pushing ability, but not the stacking. We again moved away from tractors because of that and went for stacking. Right. And
that makes sense.
And on the liquids, we're going into liquids this year. That's why I said not yet. It's definitely a tool in the toolbox that we have to integrate into our operations.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I keep hearing about liquids is they work much better in climates that are more dry than where there's a lot of moisture. Mm. So you just told me about a storm that had some moisture to it.
That's right.
But I know you get a lot of dry snow as well, and you have cold temperatures. When you talk about, you know, anything sub-zero, like most of our listeners don't see that much.
That's right.
I'll never forget the time I visited a client in Saskatoon, and we woke up, and it was in the winter, and in the morning, it was minus 30.
Incredible.
And it was just crunchy. It was, you know, I mean, if his truck wasn't plugged in, it would have been dead to the world.
Totally.
And even then, it was like, well, the first thing you do is put air in the tires, like every morning. Whoa, that's a different world.
Totally, so, yeah.
You could do well with liquids there.
Well, and we will, you know. And like a good friend of ours, Jerry Schill, said from Schill Grounds in Cleveland, Jerry said, but it's a great bookend. You know, looking at liquids, it's great for the beginning and the end of the season, right? When we get into the deep of the season, it's different, but it's a great bookends product as well.
Yeah, that's so, a great way to think about it.
Yeah.
Smart man.
Front and back.
What about sidewalk equipment?
Yeah, we've done a lot of different things there. We've played with Ventrac. So we've had Ventrac. We've done John Deere tractors. We're doing Snow Raiders. So a lot of we've got a lot of different experience with blowers and plows, blades, nothing with brushes yet, no brooms. Mm-hmm. Most of our snowfalls here are they need plowing.
Sure.
So we haven't really gotten into the brooms, but yeah, definitely mechanizing walkways as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Sounds like you don't have a go-to there right now. Sounds like you're
that's right.
You're using
You know, it's interesting, right? It's also based on what the site need is.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, the snow raider's not for everything either. Like that snow we had on Monday, there was too much snow for the snow raiders. You know, you can't run a straight line sidewalk with a snow raider. You got to run a snow blower on the tractor. There's just too much snow to cut through.
Yeah.
So we'll use the tool that's suited. Yeah.
No, that's 100% true, especially with sidewalks, because every site is so unique in terms of what's there, layout of all the walks, and if you have big pads or staircases or
reasons, scoot steers on our walks as well. Yeah, scoot steers are great on the walks.
Talk to me about the materials. So are you using treated? Yeah. Are you using bulk salt? How are you storing it?
We are using bulk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, both treated and bulk. We do our own treating. So, you know, with the mag, calcium chloride. So we've got really good treated rock salt and good bulk rock. We did our own procurement, where we brought in the vessels into the harbor here. So we procured our own product from the overseas. And so that's been great for us to be able to secure our own needs for our clients too, and not be at the mercy of the system, I like to call it. You know, but I think at some point we're all part of the system. Of course, we've got the biggest salt mine in the world, just 2 hours north of us in Goderich. So, you know, it's kind of funny that we imported.
Yeah, you had to pull in salt from where?
That's right.
Where did it come from?
We imported from Egypt, and, you know, we kept our stock houses full, from the last time. So we're able to procure our own materials for our clients, with bulk and treated, and we treat at the port. We've done our own treating there, through the pug mill process to ensure that it's rightly done. And, so we're not just spraying the piles.
Yeah. That's an amazing thing to think that a end user is procuring salt from around the world.
That's right.
You know, that much material, or do you go in with other folks on a?
Yeah, we did help. We did help other contractors that needed help.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you know, that was a time, and that time may come again. But in the meantime, we're just down to a few supports here and there, and primarily focused on our clients.
Okay, good.
That was the goal.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
I want to hear about technology. Whether it's a business management software you're using, or timekeeping software, or GPS, are there any kind of technology related things that you're excited to tell us about?
Yeah, I am. All tech. It's all tech. We're, you know, recently one of our team members actually said, it's great working here at Garden Grove in the office, but man, you got to learn a lot of tech. Everything we're doing is tech. There's nothing handwritten anymore. In fact, I don't remember. I mean, I just make the odd notes, but you know, so all of our business management software is LMN right now. We decided to go with LMN because it at the time presented the opportunity that was right. And so we're currently on that system. There are other systems that are also very good, but we're using LMN. And so when I say that, LMN is pretty big system though. Like it does a lot. We started in 2017 with LMN, and we used it just for the field at first. It was all of our LMN time, just to ensure that all of what we were doing in the field for service verification was mobile device. So we did all of that in 2017 onward with LMN time. And then what we did is over the years, we then began to build out the CRM with all of our contract services, our client database, the site maps, like all the snow maps. And then that way the two systems talk together. The last phase that we're building out right now is all the budgeting and estimating and work orders, you know, all the quoting, job costing.
Great.
So full business. But you know, it's nice for being so organized in the field with it, because an event like last week where we had the most hours worked in the week ever, and being a self-performing company, we pretty much can click a button and process our payroll through to QuickBooks quite seamlessly. I mean, there's still an approval channel, mm-hmm. but if we had to go through all of the hundreds and hundreds of hours that were worked last week in order for us to pay our payroll this week, it would have been impossible.
Army in the office.
That's right.
You said something there that was really interesting. I just want to point it out for our listeners here. Yeah. You know, it's, you really talked about a 5-year window here. And you're still not done. Like you're not done, and it takes time. And
yes.
And people get frustrated with business management systems because mm-hmm. they're difficult to implement, they're complicated, and and it's they lose hope and they give up, and then mm-hmm. and then they jump to another platform and they start all over.
Right.
And I think that's such a mistake.
Yes.
It takes time, and I think it's really smart to say, you know what, we're only going to start with this. Let's really iron this out and make sure it works. Let's get this piece dialed in. And then next year, let's bring in this piece. Next year, and then maybe it does take 5 years or 7 years. But then you have a system that works for you.
That's
instead
right.
Instead of always starting over with someone else, and then you've blown through every system that's available and you don't like any of them.
That's right.
And
that's
your
right.
people have become frustrated along the way too. And so
it's
I think
true.
That's such a big mistake. There's no perfect program out there.
No, and that's right. And the reason we actually went to LMN was because I spent 3 years in development doing our own, actually.
Wow.
A friend of mine owns his own software company. And he needed a new project at the time. And so I said, hey, Thomas, what do you think? Do you want to work on Garden Grove? And so we began to build out our own platform. And that was the worst mistake. That was the worst mistake I ever made, was to try and do my own thing. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, there was something already in the works at the time that we were able to then migrate to. So we learned a lot. But we discouraged our team in the process. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you just said. And by moving around or trying to do our own thing. So we finally stuck to LMN. The other thing is knowing who we were before we're doing all this with our software, making sure that we understand what it is that we're trying to accomplish first, and running our business already in a well-run way, mm-hmm. be it spreadsheets, it doesn't matter. As long as you're organized, then moving on to the software. Like we didn't use the software to solve our problem. There was no problem. Mm-hmm. We just wanted to become better.
Sure.
Right? We knew in order to scale up, we had to move on to software.
Yeah, and that's an important point too, because
if
and I see this with a lot of smaller companies that are maybe in that 10-year, they're still in that intro phase in the life of their business. So they're kind of just making it up every day. Well, that's not a company that's going to be easily adopting a software program where everyone has to do the A, B, and C. You know, you have to follow all these rules and click here and do this. And
that's an
uphill battle for those companies. So
you got to make sure that
well run to begin with and using best practices.
That's right.
People are used to systems. Then you're just automating a system.
Correct.
And sometimes things shift and people are like, oh, well, that used to take me 5 minutes. Now it takes me an hour. Yeah, but it just saves the office 5 hours.
Yeah.
So yeah, you are doing more, but the office, I know it's a different department, it's a different person, but it's better for the company. People have to understand that stuff.
Need to use the software for how you like it needs to be what you want it to do for your business,
Yes.
right? Choose a software tool that's going to do for you what you need it to do for your business, right? And that is really critical. Don't go on to it because you're trying to, solve a problem. Solve the problem before you're on the software,
Yeah. No,
right?
that's great advice.
So yeah, you're right. It's important too for me as an owner to, I'm an impatient person. I want everything now. I would have loved for us to be way ahead of where we are right now with our software, but it does take time. And I had to recognize that my team as well had to, right, get up to speed and listen, 12 months goes by real fast. Right? Before we know it, it's spring, but we're already planning for the winter again.
Yeah, you got to
You
look way
know?
ahead and
And
be
so,
diligent about those plans. Execute
someone
them.
said to me once, take one thing or two things and just don't try and change everything at once, but just, every year have those things that you focus on that, keep moving things forward. Change one or two things at a time.
That's right. And that was my whole point. It may take 7 years or 10 years to fully implement. You got to hang in there, but you
That's right.
have to have that strategic focus that says, in 2022, we're doing this. This is the year of fill in the blank. At
That's
the
right.
end of this year, this will be in place. And then it becomes execution. That's the focus. So I'm glad we had that conversation. I love that. I love it because that's a big part of, I mean, that's a big pain point for a lot of companies is their adoption of business management software. And I think just so many companies don't approach it that way. So I'm glad we had that conversation. I want to hear about the people side of your business. We've been talking about iron and customers and contracts. Talk to me about, everyone in the world right now is having a hiring crisis. So how do you hire? How do you hold on to people? So maybe talk to us about culture and the people side of the biz.
This is number one for us. People process sales, right? We kind of need to put things in that order. People process sales. It's not sales first. We need to make sure that we've got the people and the processes in place so that we can execute on our sales. And so when we look to the business of building our people as our greatest resource, we talk about this with our clients. We are a service company. So of course our labor is our greatest commodity. That is what you're buying from us. You're buying our time. And for us, we have said, okay, if that's the case, that's who we are. We need to invest heavily in our people. And the recruiting process is treated like sales. The onboarding process is fully integrated software systems as well. We use Bamboo HR for all of our HR systems, all of our hiring systems. So we've streamlined recruiting using software as well. And to ensure that all of our platforms align and speak and that we can onboard successfully all of our candidates. And our website speaks to our culture. That's where they see what we're hiring for. So they see our values, they see our culture, right? They see our commitment to them as team members and to grow their careers in the industry, be it to be a snow pro or to be a landscape pro. We like to encourage our landscape pros to be snow pros, but it's not always in that order. Snow pros like to be snow pros. And so we're taking on that culture as well of building a successful snow team through provocative advertising. Like, it's all snow, no fluff. So when you work at Garden Grove, it's all snow, no fluff,
I love that.
or or show old man winter a thing or two. Join it, be a snow pro and show old man winter a thing or two.
That's good.
Or winter doesn't know what's coming.
Right.
Winter doesn't know what's coming. Well, sure, of course, that's the forecast. So, but be a snow pro and be part of something greater than what some other people are doing. We're the midnight workers. We're the guys who are keeping society going. And so
Absolutely.
it's a cultural thing. It's an excitement thing. And so, yeah, really committed to building our people and our they're the front line. They're the ones who are in the trenches getting the work done.
So have you always had that mindset, or was that a more recent realization, or again, the 30-year window? Like, when did you start having those thoughts? Like, it's all about our people.
Yes.
Because not everyone comes to that conclusion.
No, that's interesting. My dad, again, one of my greatest mentors, you know, dad said, he said, you know, if you're going to commit to being in this landscape snow industry, he said this to me years ago. He said, your number one problem is going to be people. And I said, and I felt discouraged at the time. I was a young entrepreneur, young guy. I'm like, Dad, that doesn't, you're not helping me here.
Tell me something good.
You know, I said, then if that's the case, and of course I thought I knew better, right? I'm going to show my dad, you know, I said, well, then if that's the case, then if people are going to be my greatest challenge and my number one problem, then I'm going to make that my number one priority. And I'm going to make sure that I have the right solutions in place to solve that problem. And so that has been something that has been at the front of everything that we've done here. Yeah. It's, you know, and we're still doing it. We're not perfect in any stretch of the, you know, by any means, but we're working hard on our people systems and we have so much more to do.
Well, it's so apparent, you know, you can't see anything related to your brand that doesn't just scream, we care about our people and we're doing everything we can do to provide a good place for them to be. And I agree with you 100%. You have to.
It's all we have to offer our clients.
It's such a mistake when the customer is always pushed, the employees always pushed behind the customer. It's such a bad message and it just pushes people away. So I love that philosophy.
And, you know, I think there used to be some fear in the industry, and I can attest that to having this fear of saying that we were hiring. Oh no, what's the customer going to think by us always saying that we're hiring? Is the customer going to think that, you know, we're not able to service them because we're always hiring?
Yes.
And I had to overcome that thought because it's important that our clients know and see that we're actually always hiring because we are always looking for the best. And for people to join our team and our company. In fact, we want our clients to see that commitment we're making to continuously building our team. Yes.
And the reality is we're in a seasonal business. So there's going to be, there's always a healthy, normal, expected turnover.
Yeah.
So we always have to hire. So totally. Yeah, that's good. Good realization. You've mentioned your dad a couple times and I know, he is a very important person in your life, as well as your mom. But talk to us about your parents and your upbringing and like, where'd you come from and how did you and your brother decide to go into business together at a young age?
Right.
So kind of walk us through that.
Oh man, my poor brother, Paul. No, you know, it's amazing. We grew up in a Dutch family, immigrant home. Mom and dad, their families came over after the war from Holland. And they had to make hay here. They plowed new land, you know, new work, new efforts. And we grew up with that culture of, you know, working hard and not getting anything for free, no handouts. You know, mom and dad were pioneers. All of the immigrants, you know, they were pioneers. And so we grew up with that. We grew up with working in the family business. Dad was in agriculture in the egg industry. And so he was a pioneer in the egg industry across Canada. But he encouraged us to do our own thing as sons. I'm one of five children. My brother Paul and I are both very close in age together. And we grew up together. We shared a bedroom together growing up. You know, we did a lot of things growing up together. And so when dad encouraged me to, I was 15 years old. I'd already had three jobs before that, before I was 15. Mm-hmm. You know, I already had a paycheck at age 12.
Awesome. Yeah.
You know, I was getting up at 5 a.m. to go with his plant manager to the plant to sweep floors, you know, at March break when I was 12 years old.
Yeah, nice.
You know, and
such great experience.
Right. And so dad encouraged us to do our own thing. I put a flyer in the neighborhood to start offering gardening services to homeowners. And that's how it started. And and it was Lammer's Landscape. Mm-hmm. Lammer's Landscape Services. And I got so busy that I needed my brother Paul's help. Mm-hmm. So the two of us were on our bikes, driving around on our bicycles, pulling lawnmowers behind us and cutting grass. And we built a business, you know, and then our slowly it became our, you know, a car with a trailer and then a truck and a trailer. And dad told me to slow down at one point. He said, "Hey, you're going a little too fast." He okay. says, "Just take it easy." Yeah. He said, finish school.
Yeah.
So we
don't
finished
start hiring school. People when you're, you know, 14 years old.
So it's funny. I finished school by hiring people to keep my business running. So while I was in school, I had staff working. I hired a crew leader some team members so that I could finish school and they were actually doing the work so that I could be in school. But we both finished our schooling and it's history from there. We're both equal owners, equal partners. Mm-hmm. And it's just been it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah.
One that's very mutual. We both are the yin and yang of each other as well. You know, I can't do what he does, and he could do what I do, I think, but he would have said he couldn't. So, you know, it's a real match made in heaven.
Yeah. What a blessing. And that, you know, that I grew up in a family business as well and have some of those similar experiences of the 5 a.m. and the, you know, nothing handed to you kind of experiences.
Yeah.
And all those are just so valuable. So, thank you for sharing that. You're married? You have kids?
Yeah. Sabina and I have been married for 22 years. High school friend.
Okay.
And so we got married after university. And we have three children. And we live in Burlington. And we've made that our home. That's where we grew up. And that's where we still live. It's been a joy. My kids are growing up too fast, Phil.
Yeah.
I can't believe how quick it's going.
It's unreal. You know, how just a blur sometimes when you think about, you know, how fast things move. I can't even believe that I have grandchildren right now, but I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, as you know, and it's
wonderful.
Amazing.
Yes.
But you know, it's cool to
see.
What
a joy. Yes. Yeah. We're young though, Phil. We're young.
Oh yeah. We still have lots of years ahead of us. We're going strong. Talk to me about the industry, involvement. Cause you've been, you know, involved with Sima, and you have been a regular attender at Snow Fighters Institute events over the years. And,
yeah.
You're a Grow the Bench subscriber. And so how did you kind of tap into all those different things from where you sit up there in Canada?
Yeah, really good question. We, Paul and I, in 2013, we had started to do some research in 2012. And so by 2013, we pretty much figured that if we're going to grow our business, we got to find out more about Sima. And so we jumped on a plane to Minneapolis, and we went to Minneapolis in 2013. That was our first Sima show. And that was probably the most difficult moment too. It was June, our busiest time of the year, right? In the landscape industry. Sure. I think my brother thought I had rocks in my head.
Yeah.
And the two of us as business owners leaving our business, you know, trusting everyone here and taking off on a plane and flying to Minneapolis. That's a pivotal moment for us that launched us into a whole new world of relationships and networking through Sima and getting to know so many of our industry friends and peers that we know today. And that linked us to, of course, John Allen at the time and Snow Fighters from there. And we've enjoyed a wonderful, wonderful journey of being part of Snow Fighters, and now with you and Neil and Grow the Bench and Snow Fighters. And, you know, we connected with Kevin Gilbride as well and ASCA. And so we really enjoyed looking to the South. We always knew that if we're going to learn, we're not going to learn necessarily from here at home. We've always known that the U.S. is ahead of where we are here in Canada. It's a known fact. And so we thought if we're going to learn, we're going to learn from our friends south of us. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we did. And we started investing in our learning.
Yeah, that was
south of the border.
I was actually there. We probably bumped into each other. That was a great show in Minneapolis there.
Yes.
I had some good experiences there. But no, that was a risky move because I'm sure your business, you know, was, you know, it was probably run by you and your brother. And so, I mean, you were probably on the phone a lot and checking things. And
that's right.
But
that's right.
You know, going away in June to talk about snow.
That's right.
That scratcher there.
Right.
You know, but that was a good move because that, like you said, opened up your world and
That's right.
Created new relationships, new opportunities.
It sure did.
And I'm such a big proponent of, obviously, of education and, you know, getting external resources and, you know, growing your network, being part of peer groups, all those things. I mean, the more you can plug in, you got to be smart. I mean, you can't do everything. You have a family, you know, you're involved in church and everything else. There's only so much you can do.
That's right.
Be smart. But I think it's so valuable to make decisions to be involved in some of those extracurricular things to develop yourself as a professional, not only in the industry to learn about things in the industry, but as a business owner.
That's right. And it opened our thinking, right? It opened our vision, and it was very enlightening for us. It gave us the opportunity to come back home and share that information with our industry back here at home. So we got to enjoy more fruitful conversations and relationship with our industry here, Landscape Ontario. And so it's just been a real blessing to work with our friends south of the border and the industry associations and Snow Fighters. You know, that was for us just a wonderful, wonderful thing. Inner Circle just blew it wide open for us going to Inner Circle, many times Inner Circle.
Yeah.
That was awesome the best. Yes.
Well, we're loving them, and we have two coming up. So
we want to come down.
Who hasn't taken a look at the lineup? We have five different events already scheduled for 2022. So we're pretty excited about those.
Love it.
Thank you for the mention there.
You bet.
There's a couple of things here I want to just talk about briefly, and then we should probably wrap up. But I think I would really love to do a follow-up to this with Paul and you, like, you know, just all three of us just go at it. Cause there's a lot of things here I didn't get to on my list. But I don't want to keep everyone too much.
No. And he's got a lot to share operationally.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. We have definitely deep dive.
And I'd love to talk sales and how to sell snow. Mm-hmm. How do we communicate selling snow? You know, there's so much to talk about.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's a good place for us to land, actually. So let's leave it at that.
You bet.
David, thank you so much. This has been awesome. I'm sure everyone is going to be just so blessed by hearing your story and some of your insights and things. And we'll definitely do a follow-up to this. So thank you very much. Have a great rest of the winter, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks, Bill. You as well. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Snowfighters Institute podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, become a subscriber today so you won't miss any future episodes. Don't forget, please check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.